education of our children doesn't begin and end at academia. There is a spiritual responsibility on each parent and teacher to nurture and train a young soul spiritually. This is called Chinuch. Join Rabbi G every Monday at 2 p.m. as he explores education and Chinuch for parents and teachers. Torah isn't education, it's transformation.
We are back, as we do every Monday, between 2 to 3, with different discussions, different topics, anything we could learn and achieve and grow and figure out how to be better people, how to influence our friends, our families, our communities, and how to be the people we want to be in the world we want to be. Today, we are going to do something a bit different than usual. Usually, as you know, we have two or three guests on the show, and we discuss a topic from a few different angles. Today, I'm actually going to have two guests on the show. However, they're going to be separately. We're going to first go into one topic, and then the second part of the hour, we will go to another topic, which will be with a different professional. And let's see how that works out for us today, and love to hear your thoughts about it, about starting to separate the topics instead of having them in the one go-ahead. Personally, I think that as a group it goes well, but let's see how this works out. So in order to dive directly into it, you know, we talk a lot about education, and we talk about the role of the educators in a child's life and the role of somebody who's guiding, who's someone that the child can trust to be their rock in life. And probably the person that the child can trust more than anybody to be their rock in life is mom and dad. And we're going to speak a bit about that and creating routines and home and mom being the educator, mom being the rock, mom being supportive of her children. You know, they used to say by us that nothing's worse than a tired mother and a hungry father. And I'm wondering how that comes into play, especially when we're going to speak as well about sleeping and routines and really supporting our children properly. So for that, I am joined today for the discussion with Jolandi Becker. She is a mom, but she's also the owner of Goodnight Baby. And we are here to chat, discuss, and figure out some routines. So let's dive into this and first say hi. Hello, Jolandi Becker. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this topic.
Okay, so Goodnight Baby. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we have been in the business for quite some time already. For over 12 years, I've been helping families sleep, and we've helped over 16,000 families sleep better. So, wow. Yes, we come with quite a lot of experience in this field, especially with smaller babies when it comes to all things sleep. But yes, we have a very holistic approach when it comes to sleep. And one of those aspects is definitely implementing routines and schedules, because that helps babies to sleep.
Okay. So let's talk about a bit about the routines you have and the approach you take towards sleeping. But firstly, the importance. Why is it so crucial what time exactly the baby goes to bed or the child goes to sleep, or how we manage their sleep patterns?
Yeah, so the timing has a lot to do. So there's two mechanisms within the human body that actually helps us to sleep, including babies and children. They're also humans. They're not little robots.
Apparently.
They're also definitely human little beings. And there's two mechanisms within the human body that actually helps us to sleep. So the one mechanism is what is referred to as sleep pressure. And this is basically a chemical that is building up throughout the day. And at one point, it signals your brain to say, hey, you're tired, you need to sleep. This is very prevalent with children, because that is the reason why children still require daytime sleep, is because this sleep pressure that builds up. There's not a time in our lives where we learn more, grow more than in the first 2 years of our lives. And our brain actually just can't cope with that amount of learning. And at a certain point, after a certain amount of awake window, their brain signals them, hey, you need to sleep, and then they need to sleep. But more importantly to the question that you're asking is the second mechanism that helps us to sleep. And this is referred to as our circadian rhythm. So within the human body, we have an internal clock that is very deeply ingrained. And at a certain point in the night, doesn't matter who you are, your body will start producing melatonin, which is the hormone that helps us to sleep. And during the morning, your body will produce cortisol to wake you up again. And the circadian rhythm is starts at a certain point in the evening. The melatonin will start producing. And this is why it's so important to get that timing of bedtime, even for adults, so right. Because at a certain point, your melatonin starts producing, and within 30 to 40 minutes, it actually reaches its peak of levels to help you to fall asleep. And this is why we want to get that timing also so perfectly right. And again, most of the time, you're not even going to notice your circadian rhythm.
I was going to ask, do we have a way, do we have a tool or way to actually learn about our bodies when our body starts producing melatonin and to work around that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, most people as adults, we require 7 to 8 hours of nighttime sleep. So if you're waking up in the mornings at 6 o'clock, it means that you need to go to bed at 10 to get your 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Children, on the other hand, up until the age of 5, 6 years of age, require 11 to 12 hours of nighttime sleep. So if they are waking up around about 6 o'clock, it means that they need to go to bed somewhere between 6 and 7 in the evening. And that will be the optimal time of that circadian rhythm and that melatonin producing.
So I'm going to make an assumption here, and I'm going to go back to the first topic you brought up, the first important concept, which is about the you called it
sleep pressure.
Exactly. And as a person who's definitely not a professional sleeper and aware that much about the patterns and probably doesn't even do it enough, I would assume, and tell me what you're taking this assumption is, that we need to, in order to sleep, we actually need to have a point that we are ready for sleep. And our brain needs to be tired, but also our body needs to be tired. And it seems to be that in our generation and our times that we actually don't walk and we actually don't do any physical movement, our brains would get tired much earlier than our bodies and reach a point that potentially maybe we're trying to sleep and our brain is so tired that it's going ballistic and we're laying in bed and we're physically not tired because we can't fall asleep because we haven't exercised or done anything. But mentally, we've done a lot and our brain is just driving us mad and going ballistic with all of the worries and anxieties and things. Is that a lack of balance per se and something that we need to address?
Definitely. I mean, this is not rocket science in essence. Doctors tell us all the time we need to exercise and we need to be active because it helps for our mental well-being as well as our physical well-being. And of course, also our sleeping in the end of the day. And definitely, luckily for us, our brains and our bodies are, it's not separate, even though we often think of it as a separate being. It is the same thing. So even a mental fatigue can make you tired enough to be able to fall asleep at night. I think it's more the other thing that you mentioned that keeps us out of sleep is the fact that we're overthinking it and overthinking things a little bit, and that can cause us. But that's why even for children and even for adults, bedtime routines and having an appropriate bedtime that is at a specific time helps our brain to signal that sleep is coming. So it is helpful to include bedtime routines to help us know that sleep is coming and start that winding down process. But again, definitely to your point is that exercise helps for that sleep pressure to build up during the day. And that's why if you've been exercising hard in the during the day, or even if you go for training or a conference or something where you have to really concentrate really hard, your sleep pressure is building up quite a bit and you are going to be tired in the evening and need to sleep. But again, it's a combination of that circadian rhythm as well as the sleep pressure that is required for sleep.
When we think about sleep, and once a person falls asleep, then they'll need a proper few hours sleep. When we talk about the pressure building, does it build differently by day that will lead you to need to sleep for 20 minutes or an hour in the middle of the day? Is it a different kind of pressure than the sleeping that we would have at night that would go over 7 or 8 or 11 hours, depends on your age? Or it's the same thing, it's just we have a different mechanism for day sleep and night sleep?
It's definitely different because during the night we have both mechanisms, the circadian rhythm as well as the daytime pressure. It's not actually normal for adults to require daytime sleep. Maybe at a certain point, and if you're at a certain age, but now I'm talking, yeah, like after 60, then your sleep changes again. And it's surprisingly, actually, older people require less sleep, not more sleep. But it is very, there is actually something wrong with your nighttime sleep if you require a nap during the day. You didn't do something right with your nighttime sleep. So this is not something that you should be worried if you require a nap every day. obviously, if you, there's...
Because there are certain cultures that specifically have a two-hour break in the afternoon. If we look at even the German culture or previous European cultures of having a break in the middle of the day.
Spanish people love to take their siestas.
Right, exactly. So you're saying that indicates of a problem if a person can fall asleep every day at a certain time by day?
Yeah, like I said, again, there is if you need to take a daytime sleep, then you're not getting the required nighttime sleep that you need. And you're not, the quality of your sleep is not good enough. But again, it's also, I mean, like you said, a cultural thing. So it's not unusual. And again, even a siesta doesn't necessarily mean that someone is taking a nap. They might just take some quiet time to relax and not be in the daytime sun and things like that. So even though it is presumed that everyone is sleeping, it doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're doing during that time.
correct, as well as our teenagers at night.
That's also interesting with teenagers. It is also a different dynamic because, again, this is a time where lots of growth and learning happens. So the sleep pressure during the day is building up in a different way, and they become night owls. They don't sleep as much during the night anymore because of all the hormones that are happening.
Right, so that's coming into a lot. So, you know, we're speaking a lot about the quantity of sleep and the importance of quantity. You mentioned in passing about the quality of sleep. Many times we'll have people sleep enough hours but wake up not refreshed. And we're seeing that more and more, which I'm also wondering what are the factors that are leading to that. However, we will need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear the answer to that question. So if you're joining now, I just ask a question to the guest I have here, which is Jolandi Becker, who is the mom and the owner of Goodnight Baby. And we will come back, discuss more about sleeping and during our siesta hour in a moment. A short break, and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here in a fascinating discussion with Jolandi Becker, who is the owner of Goodnight Baby and a mom, which came in her title first, which is quite impressive, saying that right before the break, I asked Jolandi about the difference between quantity sleep, which kind of we speak about pretty much, and you know we also want quiet at certain hours, so we're always happy to work on quantity. But how do we actually improve the quality of sleep? We're all familiar with a child or ourselves waking up in the morning after many hours of sleep and just feeling like we just haven't slept. What do we need to do to address that challenge?
Jolandi. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things that can impact quality of sleep. And more often than not, unfortunately, quality sleep is physiological issues that could be like sleep apnea and things like that, where we're presuming we're getting a good amount of sleep, but actually we are waking up, like you said, tired. And this is often associated with more like sleep disturbances and things like sleep apnea. And you need to see a medical professional. Obviously as well, I work only with things like sleep hygiene. So it's medical issues is beyond my scope because I'm not a medical professional. I help with sleep hygiene and creating the proper sleep environment and optimal sleep space for sleeping. And now those things can have, so if you have a proper bedtime that is not too late, also minimizing the amount of screens that you are exposed to. Screens have what we call blue light. The biggest producer of blue light is the sun, and it inhibits the production of melatonin. So you want to minimize the amount of screen time that you have just before bedtime, which we all don't do. We all look at our phones just before we go to bed, which is a horrible habit because it can impact your sleep. Also the quality of sleep that you're getting because you're not setting up the right tone for it. But again,
how
a
long
simple
before
bedtime.
Sleep? Do we need to minimize screens?
At least 30 minutes to an hour, ideally, that you have to limit screens. But again, also, if you're limiting, I'm talking about having a screen in your face. So having a tablet or a phone right in front of your face. If you're like a proper distance from a TV, for instance, you're not going to be exposed to that blue light in the same way. So it should be fine. So there are better ways of doing screen time. That's actually what I'm saying. So as long as it's like not right in your face, it should minimize the impact that it has. You also these days get like really cool gadgets from the Apple store where you can get like a screen protector that minimizes the amount of blue light that you're exposed to, as well as glasses that you can wear that minimizes it. But again, as well, it's not just about the blue light. It's also what you're reading and what you're stimulating. You want to set yourself up for good sleep. So having like brushing your teeth, washing your face, you know, getting into the mood, setting a dimmed light tone, those type of things can set you up for better sleep if you have the right environmental factors in place.
So creating like a muscle memory that will kind of put you in the mode of sleeping and preparing. So the one big challenge you're speaking about is screens, which would answer the next question, how come we're seeing this more and more? Meaning I've been in education longer than I want to admit, and I have definitely seen a consistent increase of a challenge of sleeping, meaning from schools, from parents, from everybody talking about it, like kids are not sleeping, teenagers are not sleeping, and adults are not sleeping. So one would be the phones. What are other reasons that we have that are stopping us from having a quality sleep or quantity sleep that is getting worse with the years?
I think that's like cultural things. Like we seem to not put importance on sleep anymore. We, you know, there's like a badge of honor if you go to bed later and if you can function with only 6 hours of sleep and things like that. And I think that's the problem is that us as adults don't put a priority on sleep for ourselves. And our children see that as well. And that's the thing is that it's not appropriate for a primary school child to go to bed at 9. It's too late. They need like 11 hours, 10 to 11 hours of sleep. So they need to have a bedtime around 8 o'clock. And we have to create those priorities. And the same with teenagers. My 13-year-old son goes to bed at 8:30 in the evening because he still requires a good amount of sleep at night. And simple things like that, just making sure. Also, overscheduling. We all do it, even as adults, and we overschedule our children. It's like they have no time to do everything. So they get home like from sports only at 6 o'clock in the evening. They still have to do homework. They still have to have dinner. How the hell are they going to manage a bedtime at 8 o'clock if they have all those things to do? So in the end of the day, we need to prioritize sleep, need to create a little bit less stress in our children's
You're commenting lives. Something very interesting, even in the language we use, meaning instead of speaking about going to sleep when you finish the day or when the day ends, you go to sleep, or when you finish your tasks, etc. Actually, there's a time that you need to go to sleep, and that's a priority. And then if you haven't finished, you'll push it off for the rest for the next day. That's potentially a big culture change that has been happening, that we use the vocab even of just finish your day and go to sleep. And you're saying, no, don't finish your day and go to sleep. Go to sleep when you need to go to sleep. And if it's not finished, continue tomorrow.
Yeah. And you should also, again, create the priority of, and I mean, the key to prioritizing or finishing your day is maybe not to, again, overschedule. I feel like that's the thing is that our children, even my own children, I'm not talking without judgment here because my kids, both of my kids are not even at home yet because they have activities in the afternoon and it's a busy schedules that they have. But the reality is that we should maybe also stop and think about saying yes to every single thing that they need to do because there's only so many hours in the day and they can't do everything. And we should realize that for them because or else they're going to be just like us in the rat race, constantly doing stuff. And then you're finishing your day only at 12 o'clock. And then you're like wondering, why am I not sleeping?
Yeah, you make that sound like a horrible threat. Your kids are going to be just like you. And that's something that we need to avoid. I'm wondering, one of the big debates we have many times when we hear from parents is about if my child doesn't go to sleep, meaning I put them to sleep every night at 7:30 and they just do not fall asleep, at what point do I say, you know what, maybe they're just not tired and let's try again with 8:00? And at what point do I say, no, I need to be consistent with the time and it will come?
There's so many factors that can impact that, especially also the age of the child. The smaller your child, the more you as a parent are in control of their sleeping and need to. More often than not, children who struggle, especially now babies and toddlers who struggle to fall asleep, is because they've got a too late bedtime. They're overtired, overstimulated, because just like with adults, at a certain point, if you're not finding that perfect window of falling asleep where melatonin is at its optimum, your body starts producing adrenaline to wake you up and to keep you going in the end of the day. And that's the same with children. If you miss that window of opportunity, they're going to start waking up more and their body is going to react to that window that you've missed. So again, up until the age of 5 years need 11 to 12 hours of nighttime sleep.
And and they need to be in school on time. So you'll have to work with that. Do we have physical symptoms that we could identify in our children or potentially by ourselves, besides just being tired, when would be the beginning of producing melatonin the optimal, and when we reach a point that if you have these physical signs, if you don't go to sleep now, your adrenaline is going to start kicking in?
Again, I will take it from when your morning is happening. So if you are needing to wake up at 6:00, if you're an adult, you need to work back 7 to 8 hours. And again, it's also, we're talking about routines are important. Routines are very important, but flexibility is equally as important. A child's not always going to wake up at 6:00. Maybe if you have to go somewhere, yes, you can set an alarm for the baby to wake up, but have a window between 6 and 7 the day starts and between 6 and 7 the day ends, type of thing. So it depends on your age as well, and to work it back towards that. And the 7 to 8 hours is not a thumb sucking. This is based on science, and that's where the optimal window is. And you can help things to trigger the melatonin production as well, in combination with that circadian rhythm. Things like a warm shower helps to trigger the melatonin production. The warmth from the water simulates daytime warmth, and the coolness of getting out of the shower or the hot bath simulates nighttime, and that temperature change actually triggers melatonin production. And within 30, 40 minutes of that trigger, your melatonin levels will be at their peak to help you to fall asleep. Again, you can take a hot bath or a shower in the morning. It's not going to have the same impact. It is in combination with your circadian rhythm that it needs to happen.
Amazing. And it's fascinating because, we speak a lot about cold showers in the morning, how they wake you up. And you're saying that it's us, besides for the cold shower, it's actually when you step out of the cold shower into the more warm environment that gives you that kick, not necessarily the actual cold water itself as simulates more.
Yeah.
That's actually
something.
But again,
that's then a morning shower works in combination with your circadian rhythm for the morning because you produce cortisol in the morning. So it's in combination. That's why I'm saying so important. But you can also simulate the warmth and the coolness with just washing your face with warm water.
Right.
So it's not necessary that you have to have a bath or a shower.
Yeah. What we didn't speak about, but we do have to end because we're running out of time, is about when you have to stop eating before you go to sleep, which is a huge one on its own. And I'm probably too scared to bring that up, but that's its own topic. We do need to end and wrap up. Last question that I ask all the guests: what do you wish and hope that we would know as a society that will make our lives better?
Are we now talking about philosophically or
no, about sleep and profession and exactly your place?
I just want to make sure, because I want to say just be kind. But anyway, from a sleep perspective, I want people just to know that they need to prioritize it and start saying yes to sleeping and start saying no to other things. Because in the end of the day, sleep, the long-term impact of bad sleeping has a very huge impact on our mental and emotional well-being. And that's important.
So self-control is the key, I'd say, more than anything, basically. Thank you so much. That was Jolandi Becker. She is a mom and the owner of Goodnight Baby. Very insightful. And thanks for all the amazing work you're doing. And thank you for being with us today on the show.
And thanks for having me. It was great.
Amazing. And we are continuing to our next guest. But beforehand, we're going to take a short ad break. And when we come back, we will be with our next topic. Discom Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Discom Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pep smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Discom Wellness Clinic inside. Discom Pharmacists, better health starts here. And we are going to continue with a short break. And when we come back, we will be with our next guest and next topic.